This is a tape for Heritage Development. Today's date is October 19th, 1982. And we're taping at the home of Mrs. Edward Coton on Hall Avenue, 615 Hall Avenue in Aliquippa, PA. Mrs. Coton, where were you born?
In Aliquippa, West Aliquippa.
Oh.
Have you ever been down there?
I've driven through.
Yeah, it's a little island sort of off of Aliquippa. It's just sort of the tail end. Well, we lived with my grandfather. He was a Polish immigrant. Mm-hmm. And of course at the time that I was born, which was 29, they were just hitting the Depression. So things were pretty tough. And families lived together, you know. The children lived with the parents, and they did what they could. Well, we moved, I think, about 5 or 6 times. And we ended up on Plan 11. And we lived there, let's see, in about 4 different places. We rented till finally my dad bought this little, very little house, and he remodeled it himself. And I don't think he spent a couple hundred dollars for it, you know, but at the time that was a lot of money. When with the work, there was the work. The men used to walk. My dad used to walk probably from at Plan 11 up here and beyond. They would work all day picking potatoes, or somebody for a farmer that maybe had, you know, things growing. So they'd come home with a bag of potatoes. That was their pay. Or he'd walk from Plan 11 to West Aliquippa. And there was, you know, nobody had any transportation. He just walked. It was pretty tough. Let's see, I had a younger brother, an older brother, and when we lived in West Aliquippa, and there was a bank. They used to go down, all the men, there was a little island off in the river. West Aliquippa is right along the river there. Mm-hmm. Now they filled it all in and they put J&L up in there, and the men would go over and each would get a plot in. Plant a garden so they'd have something to eat. Well, my younger brother, older brother, I keep saying younger, he developed diphtheria. And in 48 hours he was dead. They just didn't have anything to cope with it. You know, they had the doctor, but they didn't even know how to diagnose something like that. So, of course, it hit my dad pretty bad, and my mother too. In fact, she got quite ill. So they had a sanatorium up on Brighthead Road, which is now out there where Penn State is, their Beaver campus out near there. So my mother spent quite a bit of time there because the doctor was afraid she was getting tuberculosis, and at the time that was deadly. And she got so run down and everything after the death of my brother. So my dad, again, you know, rather than spend the nickel or dime that you needed for transportation out there, he would walk. And of course they farmed me out with one of my aunts that lived in West Aliquippa. And so I must have been about 3 years old then, and you get shoved from one to the other, you know, because what are you going to do? My dad, he had to bring some food home, and, you know, he couldn't watch, and my dad wasn't one to watch children anyway. You know, husbands today, the wives go to work and the husbands watch the kids, but it wasn't like that then. And let's see, I think I backtracked a little bit there. Well, when I started school, we were at the little house that my dad had bought, and as I said, he added on to it. It took him a long time, but they still, you know, the work was still bad, and they there wasn't much money around, so that's when I had started school. Then I started in St. Titus. I have a younger brother that he's 18 months younger than I am, and then I have one that's 7 years younger, which probably, you know, I don't think they cared if they had any more kids because, you know, they didn't have enough food to go around. But Lou now lives in California. He's doing very well, but that's my younger brother. And then my grandfather came to live with us.
This is your grandfather from Poland?
Yes. Now, my dad is an immigrant, too. He came from Italy. And at the time, it was... how can I say, it wasn't an accepted fact that you married out of your language. Your, you know, Italians in most cases didn't marry Polish women, mm-hmm. but my dad did. My mother's Polish, and he is Italian. And, she was, I think, 15 when they got married, and they did get married early then. Got married very early, and of course she had the babies right away, you know, and so my mother, in fact, she lives right down here from me. So anyway, my grandfather had to come live with us then. My mother's family, there were 8 girls in the family, and my grandfather's wife took off. They don't know what happened to her. So she left the 5 girls. So my grandfather married, I don't know what the relation there was. I don't know if it was his first wife's sister or what, but he did remarry, and this woman had 3 boys. So there were 8 in my mother's family. So my mother, well, I think she was about 11 years old, and she had to quit school. I think she was in 3rd or 4th grade, and she could no longer go to school. She had to stay home and watch the 7 other children. She did the cooking and, you know, the cleaning, and, you know, they went to school, and she had to stay home. It was rough. She had it rough.
Was she the oldest?
She was the oldest, uh-huh.
Was
and
this in this country right
home? Mm-hmm. I was right down in West Aliquippa. Yeah, and as I said, she got married very young, of course, my grandfather didn't want her to get married because he needed her at home, but they ran off and got married, and I guess they had a tough time because nobody was accepting her on my dad's side, you know, and my grandfather was mad at my dad for taking her off and marrying her. But at that time, you didn't let these family squabbles interfere with your, you know, you went on living, you know. They had to live with him for a while, and they did. And as soon as they could get someplace else to live, they did. They moved in with other relatives, and as I said, they ended up on Cloud 11. It was 3 or 4 places that we moved to before he bought that house up there. And my dad did anything he could, you know, just to bring some food home. In fact, he ended up, he started plastering, so he did plastering work for people. So he sold that up there then, and he came up here. Now, you have to, Plan 11 was a beautiful place to go up there. Everybody, well, when we were small then, of course, yeah, and everybody was one big family. There was no, the kids were out on the street all the time. Like, you knew each other like brothers and sisters. If I was hungry, I'd go in my girlfriend's house, you know, and I'd eat. You know, of course, mothers were always there. There was always something cooking, and there was always something on the table, and if you were hungry, you just went in, and we did this all the time. We just, it was just like one big family. Everybody knew everybody else. They knew what you were doing, when you were doing it, who, you know, who you were talking to, and it was just a beautiful place to live. We grew up there, and even today, you see these people around, and you know, you all remember each other when you were, or was that 40 years ago? But it was like, we'd stand on the street corner till nobody stayed out that late, but it was 10, 11 o'clock at night, and there was no problem. You know, everybody, you were standing, you'd play games in the street, you know, nobody'd say anything. If they didn't like it, they'd just yell out the door. Then it's time for you kids to go home, you know. But nobody got mad, and there was no mugging, and no, none of this stuff you hear about now. It amazes me. I said that was the nicest place to grow up. It really was. And every year on August, the weekend of the 19th was St. Rocco, which is the patron saint of Patrica, where most all these people came from. See, when they immigrated here, they all sort of, somebody knew somebody else. When my dad first came here, he must have been 16 or 17, and he was living with an aunt on Plan 11, and the same with his brother. And just everybody lived together. You had to have somebody to live with before you come into the country. So they, you know, the Aunt Grassi had a whole slew of people there, you know. In fact, she had three houses. It was like a commune there, you know, and three or four houses. Well, all her relatives came and stayed with her, and the boys all got jobs, you know, whatever they could get, but they got jobs, and they'd give her 50 cents or something. You know, that was plenty of money then, you know, to buy some food with.
Did she own the home?
As far as I know, she did, uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know how she got around to doing this, but I guess her husband worked, you know, when he first came over. But I don't remember him, but I remember her, and everybody called her Aunt Grassi, and you know, everybody on the whole hill practically called her that. And I said, then they diversified, you know, some got houses, some got bought two or three houses, and if they had worked good enough, then they had the money to do it. And,
did they mostly buy these from the company?
On Plan 11, not so much. They had company houses in West Aliquippa. They had rows of them down one end and rows of them along the other end of the mill. This was the original mill. Right now, the mill has even taken up some of those homes. But those were company houses. On Plan 11, they were not. I built big houses up on Plan 6, where you almost went, for the supervisors in that, because they liked it up there. They can look down over the hill and see the mill, see, they didn't care the smoke was coming out or anything, you know, that was their thing. They stayed up on the hill there, and that's Plan 6. They didn't have any bus transportation or anything. Their houses are huge up there. If you've been up there, yeah, they built nice big houses. But they were all supervisors and presidents and people like that sort of ran the mill. But
did they get the smoke?
Sure, they did. They didn't care. Yeah, we used to get a lot of smoke, and everybody had coal furnaces. There was nothing electric, not that much, and you got about twice a year. Coal truck came and everybody had a coal cellar with a little window in it, and they put the chute in and you got a couple loads of coal and your walls got filthy. But you know, it was the mill, you got soot from the mill, but even in your own homes, you know, with the coal, you got a lot of black stuff around, and it was hard to keep things clean. But they wanted a job. That's where the work was, so nobody complained like now. Everybody complains about everything, but nobody complained. Everybody did what they had to do, you know, to live. And I say everybody got along fine. There was hardly any argument. Oh, there, I'm sure there were, but nobody held grudges or anything like that. Or went out and bought a gun because they didn't like what somebody was doing. So I started to tell you, on August the 19th, around that date, it was St. Rocco Day, and we had a 3-day celebration, and everybody came to Planet 11 for the celebration. They built the stage out on the street. When I remember, it was on 4th Avenue, because they built the big MPI club on Planet 11. That was the Italian club. A musical, political, Italian club.
What was the purpose of that?
That was their club. They raised their own money, and they had they'd have dinners and drawings, you know, and different things. And the men, all the men on Planet 11, the Italian men, they did different things and raised the money. They had bingos or card parties or what have you. And it's a nice building, and they. We had everything there. We had our weddings there, and St. Rocco, of course, it was, you know, because I got married on a St. Rocco Saturday, and I couldn't have the club to have my reception. I had to have it in the Polish Hall, which was a block down the street. But everybody, they had their own clubs. There was a Polish club, there was a Ukrainian club, there was a Russian club. You think Planet 11 is not big enough to hold all this, but as I said, it was close. And on whatever street that they decided they wanted to put their club up, they made room for it. And they had a bocce court out there in the MPI club. And they had dances, Valentine dances, things like that. But on St. Rocco, it was a great big, as I said, a 3-day. And the people were... There's a lot of devout Italian women. I'm sure you probably met them, some of them. They have the St. Rocco flag, and they pin money to it. And they would walk behind this flag in their bare feet the whole length of the parade. They'd have a parade. The MPI band would play. They'd have firecrackers. They woke everybody up Sunday morning at 6 o'clock. Because they'd start shooting off firecrackers, and the band would come along, not the whole band, but, you know, a few that party ones that got up earlier than the rest, and then march around to the different houses. They'd go to, say, the president of the MPI, and, you know, but in the meantime, they're walking through the street, and they'll stop in front of your house, and they played good music. They were a lot of good musicians in that band.
Did they have any kinds of discussions?
Like?
Well, I don't know, but I'm thinking it's musical, political. Did they? What was the
Well,
political
they backed, if you know, mostly it was presidential. And, of course, El Capo always had a mayor. And I think about 4 of them were from the club. You know, they'd back political figures, not to the extent where, you know, they'd make a big issue of it, but they would back people. I know there's Duke Fontana, Jimmy Mansueti. Well, Jimmy's still living. Duke has died. I can't think of any of the other ones, but... those two, I remember. I remember Duke. He was sort of a figurehead in Aquaba. The guys liked him, and you know, when he ran, they all backed him. But as far as the political part of it was, they weren't real involved in politics, but they would back candidates for different things. And I think that was about the extent. They'd have meetings, but the men would go. The women didn't bother going. Sure, they discuss things at the meetings, but you know, the women weren't supposed to know it. You know, they just left them out of things like that. They were allowed to come to the dinners and cook for the weddings, but they were perfectly happy. They didn't care. You know, they just stayed home and cooked and took care of the kids, and it worked out fine. Now, then they did start a women's auxiliary, and they did have one there. And it was sad when everybody started moving off the hill. We couldn't. They tried having the celebrations up there for, but like, the last 3 years it got really rowdy because it wasn't the same people. You know, they'd have floats and Saturday nights they'd have a dance, what they call a broom dance. This was a big thing. One of the guys would dance with the broom, you know, whoever he dropped the broom in front of, they had to get up and dance with the broom. Well, this went on until probably 11, 12 o'clock. And then they'd have a big fireworks display, huge. They used to shoot it off. There's a hill that you can see from Planet 11. Right now there's homes on it, and they have homes up there for the black people. But at the time it was just a big, nice hill. We used to go up there and have picnics and things. And in fact, clear at the top and over a little rise, they had a nice baseball field. The kids used to play, well, the grown men used to play, they play baseball up there.
Is this in Planet 11?
Mm-hmm. As I said, the hill's no longer there because they've just leveled it and put these homes up there. They're project homes, like government homes. So that went, and so I said, people start moving off the hill. Let's see, we moved off in, I got married in 49. We must have moved off the next year, about 1950, we moved off. And some people have gone before us, and a lot went after us. It just seemed, a lot of them tried to stay up there, because, as I said, it was nice, and they had their homes there. Then Jane L. built these homes. You came by them right beside the shopping center there. Mm-hmm. There's all those little homes along the highway. Well, it goes on back to, Jane L. built all those, and quite a few of the people bought those because the interest wasn't too bad, and they were giving them good buys on it. So
you mean even in 49 and 50, Jane L. was building homes?
Yeah, they built those. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was right around that time. I could be wrong, you know, it would be within a 5-year period. But they built all those.
Had they built steadily, or did they stop and then start again?
Well, Jane L. owned a lot of property. They owned where the school is now, where that big school I told you,
mm-hmm.
There was what they called Fireman's Field there. They used to play ball in that there. I'm almost sure Jane L. owned that. And whether they owned this property or bought it to build these houses, I don't know. But they did build those, and they own the golf course. They did. Well, they still do, but I don't know if they're going to hold on to it. And they'd rent the golf course to the people that belong to the club for like $1 a year. You know, it was theirs. But you see, Jane L., I think it was around that time too that they sold to LTV. See, Jane L. no longer is really Jane L. It's just they kept the name, but this is a Texas conglomerate down there that bought up quite a few mills and things like that, and it now belongs to LTV, and that's probably why they have so much trouble. You know, to them, this is just a small piece of the pie. That, you know, if they don't see instant profits on paper, you know, it's not worth much to them. When it was run and belonged to J&L itself, you know, Jones and Laughlin, they were concerned about the people that worked there and the people that lived here. But when that sort of disintegrated, they had no, you know, LTV just bought up the mill. And it's a good mill. That mill is a complete mill. They can take dust and you know, make, if they can go from step one and make steel there the whole way. But they keep sending new people, you know, I guess people they want to promote, or people in their organization that, you know, they want to give some responsibility to, or maybe some training to, or what have you. But there's new people down there all the time in the offices. Now the guys, you know, that work there, some of them have been there 40, 50 years. But
so this is like a training ground?
Well, it would seem that way, you know, because it keeps changing. And they'll bring a lot of people in from Pittsburgh, you know, they'll run it for a while or hold a position for a while, and they find someplace else for them, or you know, they take them back or send them to another. They own so much that, you know, it's no problem. So when it starts to go down, well, you know, steel hasn't been that great in this country in the last, what, 6 years, 5 years. And, you know, they have contract negotiations, and if they don't, if it's not going to benefit them to a great degree, it's, you know, it's no loss to them to write it off, you know, so the people aren't really that important anymore. As I said, at one time they did everything. In fact, my first job, they had a company store. They called the company store. It was a Pittsburgh Mercantile Company. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Is that where Food City is
mm-hmm.
now?
Mm-hmm. And it had 5 floors of merchandise there. And what they would do is buy these coupon books at the mill or at the store. I don't know how they worked it because we never had them. But they'd take the money, I guess, somehow out of their pay and give them these coupon books. And I guess it was discounted or something. I suppose it's on order, food stamps or something. But a great many people would have these books, and they could only buy food with them, you know. Because a lot of the guys would go maybe and drink their pay. These folks, they wouldn't take the money home. So this assured the families of having something to eat because they had to buy the food with these coupon books. In the meantime, while the groceries and the meat department all was down in the basement of the store. And then you had your clothing, and that was my first job. I was out of high school, and well, I went down, and they'd give us a on-the-job training thing. Oh, we were in business or something of that, and our teacher arranged for us to work there at Christmas time to get the experience of working in a store. And
Did you get paid?
Yeah, we got paid. Not much. I think it was like 45 cents an hour or something like that. But when we were in school, I don't know, they didn't pay us very much because it was a program with the school, but they didn't have any government subsidies like they do now, you know. And but I loved it. And when my senior year, I worked down here for that semester, that Christmas, and I graduated that June. And they hired me to work there. So then I took care on the third floor. They had hardware and paints and chinaware and giftware department, which that was where I worked. And I worked there for, well, till after I got married and I got pregnant and I had to quit. But they were real nice to me, and everybody bought there in the store. And as I said, there again, they just sort of, they sold it to a discount house, Mesco or something. Somebody called Mesco. And they were in operation maybe 3 or 4 years, and they weren't doing too good. So they just it stood empty for a long time until I don't know who bought it. I don't know who put up those apartments there. It's a government thing too. It's a low income rent place. And Pete LeShavio runs the food place, the grocery store downstairs. So I don't know. I'm sure there's a lot of hands in the pie now. I don't know how they run it. I sort of lost track of it. In fact, the Pittsburgh Mercantile Company, they had one in California, PA, too, because that was the mining town. So they got all their coal and stuff. And they had one down there. And my husband, when we first got married, he was in construction, and then he decided he wanted to go to school. So he went to California, PA, the teacher's college there for industrial arts. And they even offered to transfer me down to the California store, you know, so I could be with him. Well, we couldn't afford rent. You know, if I went down there, when he went down, he lived in the barracks. They had one dorm, and the GIs, because see, that was after World War II, and the GIs got education if they wanted to. You know, the government would subsidize them, not everything, but they gave them, I think it was something like $105 a month or something. Well, if I'd have went down there, we would have got an apartment, and that was, we didn't have the money. And in the meantime, he stayed, and they put up these barracks. They were just like army barracks. And the guys that went on the GI Bill, they stayed in these barracks. And, of course, they didn't have to pay that much to stay there. If anything, I don't even remember, but I didn't go down. But they did. They had a nice store down there, too. So J&L did a lot for their people. They really did. And then I think when the wages, when they started to make money and steel was getting to be such a big thing, and then, you know, everybody wanted more money and more money, and then, of course, every time the steel workers went on strike, everything else went up, and it just got out of hand, that's all. And I don't know what happened to the J&L people. I don't know if the ones that were still remaining that ran it just decided that they didn't want to do it anymore and sold it to LTV, but you know, that's what happened to J&L. But I said, it's until then, they were good to their people. They did a lot of things for them. Then everybody wanted more and better, and and I said, when you think back of what you did have and how much better everybody got along. The guys would never go on strike, you know. I don't know how they started the union down there. I'm not familiar with that setup. I think they probably needed the union at one time because, say, you know, when you're working for 50 cents an hour and breaking your back, and, you know, they were working night and day. I don't know how long their days were, but I think my mother still has some of my dad's paychecks, you know, and it's such a piddly amount. Mm-hmm. And as I said, they worked long hours in those glass furnaces and at the open hearth and in those places. That was a hard job. Those guys really worked hard. And as I said, one time they probably really needed the union just so they can live like human beings. And then I think everything just got out of hand, you know. They knew that the more they asked for, the more they'd get. And you just wonder about the people that decided that they were going to take over and run things. And it doesn't always work out for the best.
Did your father work in the union?
Oh, yeah. That's where, well, that's the only place he really worked besides doing his plastering. He did that on his side. My dad worked from 11 to 7, and he'd come home in the morning and have breakfast, and he'd go out. My dad didn't, once he went to sleep, you know, he didn't want to be disturbed again. So rather than go to sleep and be groggy, when he'd come home and eat breakfast, then he'd go out and do his side job. Plastering or whoever jobs he had. He used to go down to Geneva College a lot, and just people that he knew, you know, they have patching or even whole houses.
He
and
had an 8-hour shift then.
At the time, see, this is already, this was already well, right before I got married, probably in the middle 40s. Mm-hmm. And he started to do this, and he worked in the mill then. It was just during the Depression that there was just no work, and they just had to do what they could to get a few pennies, you know, but you could buy a dozen of oranges for a nickel, and apples, you can get a whole bushel full if you wanted to go out and pick them, so that's what they did, you know, they'd go out and they'd pick them, and they'd carry them home so that you have something to eat. But the work was bad because nobody was working, you know. But he always had a job down the mill, and then he worked, and then when he started to do this side job, then he got he asked to work 11 to 7, so then he'd come home maybe 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever time he got done, and then he'd have his meal and he'd go to sleep and get up then at 10 o'clock and go back down the mill, but he did that all the time. And of course people don't do that now, you know, they work 8 hours and you know, they put in their day, they want to go watch the ball game or go down the river. But Yeah, it was tough, but everybody got along well. Now, see, my brother, he's been down the mill. Oh, I know he has to be down the mill 40, maybe not that long, because he was in the service. I can't remember, but he was a supervisor down there. But now they laid off all those supervisors, and he's been laid off now. So I don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't either. It's just something that. But when Janelle was working, it was great. You know, it's just like down there in Midland. I can't believe that this is all gone now. So what's going to happen? Who knows?
What about your years in grade school when you started the same high school?
Yeah. As I said, there were many, many of us. So the nuns didn't have a whole lot of time to spend with each individual. So you had your work to do, and you paid attention, and you did things the way they were supposed to be done, or else, you know, their punishment was handed out. You know, you did it, or you got punished, and you knew that. And as many of us as there were, they seemed to, as I said, they controlled everything. You know, if they caught you doing something, they always had the ruler. That snap your hands with the ruler, and it hurt. And when you start in St. Titus, I don't know if they still do it, but they have, you know, you start with this Palmer method of writing, and you had to do it right. They didn't allow you. You had to do it right. You know, you did your, you know, you didn't move your wrist or your fingers, or you got smacked with the ruler. But I know everybody, almost everybody that's gone to St. Titus writes pretty. And all the nuns had such pretty handwriting. You know, they'd get up on that blackboard, and these old words would just flow in there. We always had spelling bees, and you learned how to spell, you learned how to read. You learned your numbers, and you learned from number one. And you did your numbers, and you wrote them, and you wrote them in lines, and you wrote them straight, and you wrote them so you could, so somebody else could read them. I'll never forget that. You know, it should tell. I don't remember who it was. We said somebody else has to read that. You know, and if you can't read it yourself, you know, how's somebody else going to read it? But and religion was. We always had an hour of religion all the time. In every grade that I can remember, we always kept the first Fridays. I don't know if they still do it. But we had to go. I can't remember if we had confession Thursday night or Friday morning. I think we went Friday morning, and we didn't eat. At the time, you had to fast from midnight to the next day, so you brought a little cupcake or something with you to school in the morning, because you had to keep your, you had to go to Mass and communion and confession if you had to go on Friday, on the first Friday of the month. But we all did that. I mean, you didn't have a choice. You had to do it. And other than that, I know everyone that came out of St. Titus, they were always a little more advanced than the other children, and that came from the other schools. So you went into junior high to high school. A lot of the people from St. Titus would go over to Quigley, not Quigley. Oh, they had a Catholic school in Ambridge, and I can't think of the name. It was right in town in Ambridge.
St. Veronica's?
St. Veronica's, yeah. A lot of the kids that left, went through the eighth grade down at St. Titus, went over to St. Veronica's. So you didn't get a whole lot of them coming up to the high school, and that was the public school. And so I kind of lost track of a lot of them that went with me. Of course, I went to junior high up at Jones School. My mother cried when I did it, but all my friends were going up there and everything, and all the people from St. Titus, they all lived in other directions. And like I said, you didn't have a car, and you weren't allowed out late, and you know, and I was always on the corner with the people from Plan 11, all the friends that I grew up with, And when it come time to go to school, you know, I couldn't go to school with them. And so when it got, I just begged and begged. My dad, he wasn't too, he never thought girls needed an education anyway. He figured he was sending me to school because he had to. The law says this girl has to go to school. So he wasn't, he wasn't too firm one way or the other. But I finally talked my mother into letting me go up there. But that's why I left St. Titus in sixth grade. But I learned a lot down there. And I'm sure my brother went the whole 8 years. And of course, he never got in trouble or anything. You know, I guess I was kind of the black sheep. I was always doing something my mother didn't like. But he went the whole 8 years, and he liked it. He liked it down there. But of course, when it came down time for high school, he had to go to Alcoa High because, as I said again, if you didn't have transportation or money to get the bus and things like that, well, you just didn't do those things. You just accepted it.
Why do you think your mother did send you to St. Titus and most of the families from Grand Haven did not send their children?
I don't know. She, I guess it was just something that she felt she, you know, this is what she wanted for us. She wanted us to go down there. And as I said, and she skimped and everything. She tried, you know, every Sunday to put at least, the children all got envelopes too. We had to put envelopes in on Sunday, and maybe we just put a nickel in ours, you know. And maybe she couldn't put something in every Sunday, but maybe when she had the money, then she'd give maybe $2 or $3 instead of one, you know. But she'd skimp and everything, but she just wanted that. She just wanted that for us. My mother, she just believes that God's going to take care of everybody and everything if you're good. And he said, if you're good to him, then he's going to be good to you. And she does. She does a lot of nice things for everybody, and she just thinks that's what you're supposed to do. And she wanted us. She didn't go to church a lot because she couldn't. She was busy with my dad and my grandfather. My grandfather wouldn't eat any Italian food. He was just being, you know, he was just being spoiled. So she had to make like stuffed cabbage and soup and things like that for my grandfather. My dad wouldn't eat any Polish food because he it was his house and he was going to eat what he liked. So she had to make spaghetti and raviolis and gnocchi and all this stuff for my dad. So poor woman was cooking or cleaning, and then she had three babies.
What did the children eat? And your brothers?
Anything. We ate anything and everything. There was none of this picky stuff, and there wasn't Burger King and Wendy's, you know, where you could go. And we just ate anything. Stews, a lot of spaghetti. She always made spaghetti. She always baked a lot. And that was my weakness. I mean, she'd bake pies. She'd bake 5 and 6 pies. I mean, you don't bake one pie, you know, when you have, like I said, our friends would come in, too. And, you know, my girlfriends would come, my brother's friends would come. And whatever you had in the house was for everybody. You know, they were hungry, they ate. We'd have lunch meats and stuff like that. You know, my grandfather would make sausage. My dad made sausage. My grandfather made kielbasa. And we had enough to eat. And it was always soups and stews and things like that. You know, we never had steak when we were little. I didn't even know what steak was. We had ground meat, lots of meatballs and meatloaf, stuff like that. But the Italian people, they must have learned from over in Italy, but they had all kinds of dishes that you could make out of beans and bread. Mm-hmm. And it's real good. All you throw in a little sauce in it, and it was good. And you just cook it all up together. And I said, what's healthier? You know, you have your bread, your beans, and it was like a soup. And there was plenty to eat, you know. Of course, I'm sure, you know, once in a while we'd get a treat and get ice cream cone. And my dad would come back from the club with a tube of M&Ms, you know. But this was a big treat. And everybody got along fine.
I want to ask you more about school. How many students did you say you had in the class?
Our first grade class had 72.
You remember the first day?
And The first day I was petrified, but there was, if I can remember, my mother, no, she didn't. I don't know if she came down with me or not. I think she came up to the top of the steps. We had these big steps to go up to Plan 11. There were just a row just climbing up the side of that hill up to Plan 11. And I think she came up to the top of the steps with me because she couldn't leave home too long. And I went down, I was petrified. I really was. And I don't think we had 1.5 day of school. And my name is Augustina. Okay, my father gave me that name. When I had babies, he told me he'd name them short names. I wanted to name my son Christopher, and he said, that's too long. You name him something short that I could remember, see? And I said, Dad, and I have Augustina. That was his mother's name, see? It was spelled different, but I started with Augustina. Well, a lot of the nuns, you know, well, it's not hard to pronounce, but it looks so long that when you look at it, it looks like a long name. So I have to learn to write this, you know, in Palmer method.
Oh.
So I would cringe, you know, and they take roll call, and it's, you know, you could see that so that she could more or less remember, you know, where you are alphabetically, it usually was. But they had to bring in some more chairs because there were a couple kids like standing along the wall. That's a lot of kids. And that first grade room, it was big, but you know, it wasn't that big. But